Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
What's going on, Wisconsin? Welcome into the final hour of the Bill Michaels Show. If you're just joining us and wondering, hey, who's that guy? Well, my name's Marcus Paff. Once again, getting the opportunity to keep the chair warm. I appreciate that. Radio Joe Zinzola is here as well. And as always, we're having a lot of fun just talking sports. It's not a bad gig. I can't complain. We have talked a lot of Brewers baseball in this edition of the show. We will come back around to that in the latter portion of this hour. Of course, the series opening up tonight, a four-game series with the Arizona Diamondbacks out west. Zach Davies will take the bump and try to keep this good momentum, these good vibes rolling. And they need to. You need 2 weeks of quality play to be buyers and factor into this race. Then again, I say that maybe you don't, given the way that the National League is shaped up. I still say, though, that that will determine David Stern's approach. Okay, right now, we're going to talk a little football, though, as joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline, he's our grain and gold analyst. Paul Immig is back. Do we not have an open, Joe? Do we play the music?
Need the latest news analysis on your grain and gold? Well, we better call Paul.
I'm too busy multitasking here. It's part of my job as a producer. That's on me. That's not on you. That's on me. Sorry, Paul.
No, man. I had to hear the Better Call Saul music again because I never pass up an opportunity to talk about the show, even though it's never going to be on again for another 5 years.
I would like it on the record. I think that has become the Better Call Paul music, and it's Better Call Saul who's borrowing it.
I like that. Trademark. Paul Immig, joining us.
That was a lie. Yeah, okay, that was a lie.
I'll buy it for the time being. Hey, Paul, we're going to talk Packers, but I know you're a Bucks fan, too. Did you see the report from Shams today that J.R.
Sure
Smith
did.
Meeting with the Bucks?
I saw the report. I saw the airport picture from random Bucks fan, whomever that was.
Did you take that picture, Paul? Were you at the airport?
That was not me. I was not scouring General Mitchell today. I don't know what's the consensus been amongst the two of you and among callers and Twitterers and whatever else. I'm not sure how to feel about the possibility of J.R. Smith.
I'm right there with you. He's a talented guy. Certainly the decision making has been questionable, to say the least, in the past. Forever we will remember that befuddled look after bringing the ball back out top after the missed free throw against Golden State and LeBron going, what are you doing? But I think Kyle Korver is the name that most Bucks fans have sort of honed in on and hope will be the next player to wear the green. So we'll see.
And
I don't know. It's interesting. What will the price be?
If I may, by the way, I think the price would be the veteran minimum, which can hopefully help us feel better about it, because if I understand it correctly from the smart people in Bucks world, like Frank Mann and Eric Name, that's all the Bucks have to offer is a veteran's minimum. So it wouldn't be a lot of money. It would just be one of the final two roster spots. But seeing as you open with a non-Packers topic, and I know we want to get into that, I just want to answer a question that when Joe sends out on Twitter, the show for the day, and he says, here's the guests and here's the topics. Is Keston Hira the real deal? May I answer that question quickly, Joe and Mark?
Please, the floor is yours.
If you haven't seen my tweets about it, Keston Hira, I'm a big Fangraphs guy. I like to look at my Fangraphs stats. So Keston Hira, through 137 plate appearances, is the best hitting second baseman in all of Major League Baseball. Number one in OPS, number one in WOBA, weighted on base average, number one in weighted runs created plus, you name the statistic, Keston Hira is the best at it in all of Major League Baseball. It's crazy. I mean, the guy, is he the real deal? Yeah, because he's the best, you know what, he's the best second baseman in all of the majors. So I think if that's not the real deal, what is? But yeah, so I digress.
I'm just going to start making up acronyms and throwing them out there. You wouldn't believe what his ABW is or his YBX with how many of these stats we have today. And I'll say, I'm with you, and I know we got to get to the Packers, but I'm with you on that. I brought this up. It's just sort of a, I don't want to call it a cautionary tale, but look, Corbin Burnes, I think, still has great potential, but he was fantastic last year, and no secret, he's regressed this year. So I think we approach that from the, all right, temper it a little bit because the guy is fantastic right now. We'll see where things go as teams adjust to him and he's forced to adjust back. But ultimately, I think Keston Hira, as he has proven at every level of baseball he has been at, the guy can hit, Paul. The guy
he just,
can
he
hit.
He just hits. I think if there's any skill in baseball that makes me feel comfortable with a guy not falling apart, it's the hit tool. I mean, you can be fast and you can have a great arm and you can be stronger. If you're a pitcher, you can have, like, all the spin rates in the world that Corbin Burnes has, and all, you know, five pitch arsenal. The one thing that is consistent, if you know, as prospects become stars in the majors, is the hit tool. The hit tool doesn't leave you, and that is clearly the Keston Hira trademark. So, I would venture to say, because his strikeout rate is fairly high, if anything, he's going to get better offensive numbers as his strikeouts get cut down. So I might I've been drinking the Hira Kool-Aid since 2 years ago at the draft, but so I'm an OG Hira guy.
I like that. That's how I'm going to introduce you from now on. Paul Emig, our OG Hira guy, here to talk some Packers football, actually, as we get
I'll
into that.
I'll update my
Paul.
Twitter bio accordingly, yeah.
I look forward to that. We were talking about this earlier on the show as well. Jimmy Graham and what the Packers need out of him this season in order to be the type of offense that they expect to be and certainly fans expect them to be. He's 32 now, Paul, so I don't know that anybody should expect the 25-year-old Jimmy Graham, but still a lot of tools in his bag, you would think. He's healthy as of right now. What are you expecting from him this season?
Not a ton.
Really? Okay.
It's been a long time. I think what Jimmy Graham did early in his career in New Orleans was he gained almost like an exorbitant amount of goodwill among NFL fans because he was just a monster when he was teamed up with Drew Brees. They got, a first-round pick for him in that trade with Seattle, plus that starting center with Unger, wasn't it? I mean, trying to go rack my brain from 5-6 years ago without referencing it. But, he was amazing. And you know, it's just, I just don't see that player anymore. I mean, there was a point when, you know, Bill and I would talk about this back in December, January, and it was like, I think it was a very easy conversation to have is like, hey, should the Packers bring back Jimmy Graham for whatever his cap hit number is this year, like $12 million, or are you better off just taking the dead money hit and bringing him and not bringing him back? And like, I think there's a case to be made that, you know, that you should have gone the latter route. Now, more important than what I think is obviously what Aaron Rodgers thinks, is what Matt LaFleur thinks, is what Brian Gutekunst thinks. And yes, this wasn't like a situation where cutting Jimmy Graham would have given you like full cap flexibility again. I mean, he had a huge dead cap number. So there was more than just his performance in terms of reasons that you'd bring him back if you're looking at the overall cap math equation of the whole thing. I'm just pessimistic, man. It's been too many seasons for me of watching a guy who, by the way, was never even an average blocking tight end. I mean, and that's probably putting it fairly kindly. He's a one-dimensional guy in the fact that he can catch passes, but you know, he benefits from the fact that he's 6'7" and he's just a monster. Like in terms of middle of the field, he's so hard to cover. But especially after the season he had last year in Green Bay, after some of the seasons he had in Seattle, I think I need to see before I believe. So I'm a bit on the pessimism side on the Jimmy Graham stuff.
Well, that being said then, Paul, if they are going to, again, get to where people expect them to be, and we got into this on Tuesday, what's realistic for this offense in year one, but if they are going to get there, you start to look around the young guys, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Equanimeous St. Brown. You also, I think some people forget about Geronimo Allison just because he got hurt at the end of last season. Jake Kumerow is there. Jamon Moore, who was supposed to be extraordinarily talented but couldn't hang onto the football, so saw his opportunities dwindle. And then I'll even throw Jay Sternberger out there as, you know, one of your top draft picks at that position. Yeah. Who do you see stepping up and supplementing Davante Adams? Because Lord knows somebody else is going to have to occupy that number two and number three role for them to be able to get the job done on offense.
Yeah, and I think it's fairly wide open behind Davante Adams in terms of, you know, the hierarchy in Aaron Rodgers' head, probably in terms of the, you know, schematics in Matt LaFleur's offense, with tons to be figured out in training camp and preseason. But I think the, you know, sort of the week before training camp depth chart would probably say that it would be Geronimo number two, Valdez Scantling number three, and then a pretty, you know, stacked battle for number four, five, six, and even seven if you want to add in Trevor Davis, if he's able to, at some point in his career here, be more than just a return guy, which, you know, certainly is TBD, you know, Kumaro and Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown. So, you know, I'm a Geronimo Allison guy. I definitely think that had he not gotten injured last year, and he wasn't just contributing on, you know, offense. He had that blocked punt in week two or one, I forget. I think it was week two that led to a touchdown. I mean, he was really coming on, and I think had he had a healthy season, I don't think it would have changed, like, the fortunes of Mike McCarthy or of the Packers offense or anything, but I think we'd have a much higher opinion going into the 2019 season of Geronimo Allison as a football player, as a contributing member of this team, both as a wide receiver and as a special teams guy, and that's where I think he is. I think he's the number two, but there's a reason that, you know, Allison, and again, and as much time as GMs spend studying the draft and studying players, guys like Geronimo Allison slip through and go undrafted, right? There, I mean, it's clearly every team in the league made a mistake seven times over because there's not a team in this league that Geronimo Allison would not be on the roster with. Now, might he not be the number two everywhere? Probably not, but he's clearly an NFL wide receiver. Having said that, the size and speed combinations that Valdez Scantling, St. Brown, and Jamon Moore have, Brian Gutekunst has a type. He clearly wants tall, fast wide receivers and kind of hopes that they can figure the rest out, particularly with Jamon Moore and the drop issue. So, you know, the ceiling for those three guys that were drafted a year ago at wide receiver is higher than what it is for Geronimo Allison, and I think that's fair to say. But what you have in Allison is a consistent, steady guy who I really think was getting on the same page, a huge trust with Rodgers early in the season of 2018 before Allison got hurt and everything started to go downhill. So, I mean, I think you go into it saying Adams 1, obviously, Allison 2, Valdez Scantling 3, and then 4 through 7 being bunched up. But I don't think that means that, you know, by even week 2, week 3, much less week 10, that order will be the same. Because 2 through 7, including Allison in that, I mean, they're going to let them battle it out. And I think that's a very – when you have depth there like that, you kind of have 5, 6 guys grouped up, I think it brings out the best in all of them.
Yeah, offensively speaking, that's one of the more intriguing storylines for me. And to your points about Allison, yeah, a guy that has come a long way since coming out of Illinois. And frankly, pretty cool to see as you watch his career develop. Expecting, I know a lot of people are, big things from him. Winding down with Paul Emig right now, we hear so much about Matt LaFleur's offense. We talked a lot about defense on Tuesday, so I'm going to keep it here. The need to utilize the run game in LaFleur's scheme and open up the passing game. It's I guess, something that's worthy of discussion to think Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams could be prominent players in what they're attempting to do this year. But, you know, Mike McCarthy always insisted that he wanted to be more balanced on that side of the ball, too. It didn't always materialize, as we know. How likely do you think it is that Green Bay's ground game is actually featured in more of a prominent role this season?
I think it's almost a certainty. One project I want to do before next week, and if, you know, one of you guys want to do it for me, let me know, is that I want to look at how many times over the past, I don't know, let's call it 5 years, that the running backs have touched the ball over the past 5 years cumulatively. So, you know, and not including, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield. Let's shoot a number in the dark, and let's say that Packers running backs at a whole averaged, 25 touches a game as a whole, times 25 by 16, whatever the math is there. It's like 400 touches per season for the running backs. Whatever it is under LaFleur is going to surpass that number, and probably by a significant margin. it's part of the staple of the Shanahan offense that Matt LaFleur has adopted. It's clearly one of the, I think, probably bigger points of his hiring was him. You know, Matt LaFleur, what's your fundamental offensive scheme? What do you most believe in? And what Matt LaFleur, at least schematically, would seem to believe in, if you study the history of that offense, is running backs, getting the ball, not just you know, being handed it, but being tossed out of the backfield with, you know, little short routes. So I think, like, if you were to put, like, an over-under on whatever the average was over the past five seasons of Packers running back touches, whatever that number was average over the last 5 years, it will be greater than that in the 2019 season. And if it's not, you know, schematically speaking, I think something would have gone wrong, because LaFleur, on paper, and again, he has to prove that he can stick to his guns when the product is actually happening on the field and there's all these variables, but whatever that would be, I think he's going to want to exceed the number of touches that running backs got under Mike McCarthy, because that's the staple of that offense.
He's Paul Immig, our Green and Gold analyst, and an OG Keston Hira backer. We'll add that to the title. Paul, always appreciate the conversation, man. Enjoy it. Would love to keep it going, but alas, we are out of time. We'll do it again down the road. Thanks so much, man. Talk soon.
Thanks, Marcus, and see you, Joe. See you guys.
Paul Immig joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider, hiring drivers right now. They work hard. You work hard. They treat you fair. For 80-plus years, they've been getting it done. Call them at 800-44-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com. Come back. I want to react to a little bit of what Paul said there. A certainty that the ground game is featured more prominently this year. I like the sound of that. Do you? That's coming up next on The Bill Michaels Show.
This portion of the Bill Michaels Show brought to you by our friends at Van Horn Automotive. Sometimes a ride around the block just not enough, and that's why Van Horn, they offer the 90-day test drive program. Now, they've got 15 dealerships all throughout the state of Wisconsin, and that's what I did. I went to their one in Plymouth to the truck center and got the new Ram 1500, took it for 90 days, loved it, ended up buying it. And if you're not satisfied, the best part about it, you can return it with no additional commitment, or if you do buy it, you can save up to $2,000. Like I said, I got the 2019 Ram 1500 and love it. All you got to do is go to vanhornauto.com and shop the inventory that qualifies for the 90-day test drive program exclusively at Van Horn. Go to vanhornauto.com. That's vanhornauto.com. Family born and employee owned.
You're listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
This portion of the Bill Michaels Show brought to you by our friends at Cousin Subs. Are you ready to go hog wild? Cousin Subs' famous Cubano, it is back along with the new Wisconsin pork and Gouda. You can try the Cubano with ham, Genoa salami, pulled pork, Swiss cheese, and so much more. Or the Wisconsin pork and Gouda featuring pulled pork, bacon, Wisconsin smoked Gouda cheese, onions, mayo, and Dijon mustard. Oh, so good. Order them online at CousinSubs.com for a limited time only. Delivery is now available in select locations, and that's Cousin Subs, where they believe in better, the official sub sandwich of the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Hey, welcome back to the Bill Michaels Show. Marcus Paff getting a chance to fill in today. Bill out this week. Tim Allen will be back in the chair tomorrow. Appreciate your company. Radio Joe Zanzola is here as well. We are keeping tabs on the British Open. And, Joe, it looks like the wind has really picked up as I'm looking at this. And as conditions go, as a bad golfer that I am, I don't care, I still love to play, that's probably the one that I least like to deal with out on the course.
Yeah, I played Monday. The wind was, I mean, it was hot out, but the wind was just whipping everywhere. And that certainly didn't help. That did not help my golf game. I remember one hole was this long par five, but wide open par five, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hit the drive. I hit it perfect and it was cutting. And all of a sudden that wind took it. And of course there's a fairway bunker right in the middle and it went right in the bunker. If I didn't have the wind, that's easily split in the fairway and I got a chance of going for the green. Instead, I had to get out of the bunker, and of course, I barely got out of it, and that screwed me all up.
It's brutal, man. Like, and I lived in Las Vegas for a few years, and I think people that have been there probably recognize this. There is a lot of wind in the desert. I know Chicago's the windy city. I would argue Vegas could be right up there. Just look at some of the landings you have going into that airport sometimes. It's crazy. But yeah, look, maybe it helps you for half the holes, depending upon how they're situated, but trying to hit into a big gust is brutal. So I realize that these guys are pros. That said, some guys' games are more suited or better suited to this than others. And as we've noted, I don't know if it's the wind. It's probably a combination of things, but not suited for Tiger right now.
Okay, well, I'll say this. Tiger Woods is plus six, and he actually just made his first birdie of the day. It was a long putt, and you could just see the sigh of relief from him after finally birdieing his first hole. But if this makes the average golfer feel any better about themselves, take a wild guess what the worst score on the golf course was today at the British Open.
Ooh, well, if Tiger's plus six, I mean, I'm sure it's down the a ways from that. I would say, let's say plus 13.
Worse.
Are we plus 20?
Plus 20. David,
I'll tell you what, I'd be thrilled with a plus 20 at this course.
David Duval, and we all remember David Duval. He was once the number one golfer in the world. Yeah. So David Duval won a British Open, so he gets to play there every year. And David Duval really doesn't do much anymore. He's on the Golf Channel as an analyst, but he played the British Open. He shot 20 over today for a 91. And for people like you and me, and for many of those listening, that's a 91 is not a bad score.
Thrilled.
David Duval made a 14 on a hole today.
And he still shot a 91?
And still shot a 91. This was his card on the front nine. David Duval goes birdie, birdie, then par, par, then makes an eight, then a bogey, then a 14 on a par five. So that's nine over on a par five. He then pars the next hole, bogeys number nine, cards a 49.
Oh, my God, man. That... the fact that he still carded that score despite a snowman and a 14, you know, that's at that point I'm flagging down the Bev girl like, hey, what do you got? Do you have anything harder than that beer? Because I need to forget about everything that's taking place out here. Good for David Duval. Like, I always love those sponsor exemptions for guys that continue to take advantage of them, even though it's like 20 years past their prime. Why not? Like, all right, I get to go play one of the best courses in the world. I'm not going to win anything, but who cares? I can play some, you know, play some golf, and virtually pressure-free golf, I would assume, at that point, because you're not going into it anticipating that you need to win anything.
Well, there was another tidbit. John Daly also won a British Open, and you know John Daly. He's one of the most colorful golfers out there. Daly did not play the British Open this year, because what he's been doing on the Champions Tour, which they allow him to do, is you can take a cart around the golf course. Your caddy still has to walk it, but you as a golfer are allowed to take a cart. And he's been having some health issues lately, and he wanted to know from the people at the British Open whether or not he could use a cart, and they would not allow it, even though he was a champ at the British Open. So he said, screw it. So now he's playing. There's a PGA Tour event down in Kentucky this week that's going up against the British Open. It's kind of like what the U.S. Bank Championship was in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So he's going to go. He's playing in that today, and I think he's able to use a cart. So there you go. You got John Daly playing in Kentucky.
I don't have a huge problem with that. I don't know. I mean, I realize some people are probably furious about it, but at some point, then you're gonna get all sorts of requests for the cart, and I don't know. That's a touchy subject. Certainly, I do not understand why the caddy still has to walk it. It's punish him for some reason, but I suppose there's some sort of competitive advantage that they see in all that. Anyway, we will keep tabs on this. We'll give you an update before everything wraps up today. No, we don't have a ton of time left now, but I had intended to react to Paul Emig, who joined us in the previous segment. And a couple of things that surprised me there, Joe. One, he does not anticipate Jimmy Graham being a factor, much of a factor in this year's offense. And he said he's virtually certain, or it's a certainty, that the run game is going to factor in much more prominently, which, you know, if you believe the reports, that's certainly true. I guess my question in it all was that, you know, Mark McCarthy said he wanted that to happen too. How much of that was Aaron Rodgers changing plays from the run out of the run game into the pass game to the point that that balance just never materialized?
Yeah, there's a lot to digest there. First of all, I do expect
the running backs to be utilized more, and that way it's less wear and tear when it comes to Aaron Rodgers trying to get to the quarterback as soon as he can because he's got the football. The question I have is how many carries is Aaron Jones going to get per game? Is he going to be the bell cow? Is he going to get 20 to 25 carries a game, or is it only going to be 15 because he's a smaller guy, which means now Jamal Williams is going to be utilized more? So that's the first question I have, is how will LaFleur use that duo? Because Jamal Williams didn't play all that well last year. Aaron Jones was the stud. But because he's a smaller back, do you want to give him 20 carries a game? Don't know. Jimmy Graham, on the other hand, this is the last straw with me with Jimmy Graham. I'm willing to see how LaFleur can use him in this offense. But if Jimmy Graham is not a target in any way, at least a red zone target, then they need to cut bait with him after next season and just eat up the money that he has left on that contract. Because to me, this guy is becoming dead weight fast.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. If he's not going to at least produce in the red zone, which was kind of the minimal expectation when you brought him in, then yeah, I'm not sure that there's a whole lot left there that he's going to give you, because as Paul pointed out, he's not giving you anything in the blocking game. Jay Sternberger, very interested to see how he develops, how quickly he can become a prominent part of this offense as well. But as we all know, with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, you got to find a way to develop trust with him really, really fast. Okay, we'll pause. We'll come back, and I want to bring it back around to the Brewers as well. What we saw the last couple of days, and not just on the field, but what we saw from a lineup standpoint. We'll revisit that topic and then look ahead to tonight as they are into Arizona opening up a 4-game series. I think it's safe to say that you could call all of these series leading into the trade deadline critical, because they will determine what the Brewers ultimately do. That's coming up next. It is the Bill Michaels Show.
This portion of the Bill Michaels Show brought to you by Wisconsin, Harley-Davidson, and Oconomowoc. This week, you get to go Platinum, the award-winning Harley-Davidson dealership. Wednesday from 6 to 9, it's another big bike night at the Wisconsin Harley-Davidson with great food, cold drinks, a special appearance of the Corbin Sprint Car, which is sponsored by Wisconsin Harley-Davidson. Plus, also live entertainment called Southbound. They're going to be there, door prize drawings, and the famous T-shirt toss as well. Saturday, you can make plans for a fun afternoon at the Barbecue Bash, noon to 3. There's lots of cold beer and delicious freshly grilled brats and burgers by the Oconomowoc Lions Club. Your brat or burger is free with your donation to the Pewaukee Food Pantry of 3 non-perishable food items. So there's a lot going on out there. Enjoy live entertainment by Maple Road, door prizes as well. The bike night is Wednesday night. Saturday, the Barbecue Bash. That's Wisconsin Harley-Davidson, just minutes west of Milwaukee off 94. Take exit 282 to Highway 67. It's right there south of the highway. You can't miss it. For more information, check out WISHD.com or call them today, 262-569-8500. Just go to Wisconsin Harley-Davidson and enjoy yourself. That's WISHD.com.
Border to Border, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
This portion of the program brought to you by our friends at Neumel Medical, treating guys with ED all over the state of Wisconsin and beyond the borders. They have a 98% success rate, all but guaranteeing the fact that they can fix you, help you with your problem. And if you're feeling moody or sluggish or run down, no stamina, no energy, they can help you out there as well. Just stop in and get your numbers checked for low T. Takes about 10, 15 minutes. And they can help you out almost right then and there, right on the spot, at least set you up with a program. And if you're looking down right now and you're thinking, man, I need to lose a few pounds or jumpstart the new health and wellness system, that's the way to do it. Go to Neumel Medical. Call the medical experts over at Neumel Medical Center, 414-455-4451. That's 414-455-4451.
The Bill Michaels Show continues with Marcus Baff in today for Bill, along with Radio Joe Zinzola. Joe, I'm looking at an article on MLB.com right now, and I don't remember the last time that this would have been the case, or if there was a last time, but they're doing a piece on every division in baseball and whether each team is a buyer or seller. All five teams in the NL Central are buyers right now. It's astounding to me that you could possibly have that be the case. But frankly, John Heyman talked about this when we had him on in hour number three, that there's probably only one team that is without a shadow of a doubt a seller at this point in the National League, and that's the Miami Marlins. It's wild to think that, I mean, are the bulk of the sellers then going to come from American League teams? And, you know, how much is there to actually go around? Part of the reason that the Brewers might not actually buy more than people want them to is because there's not much availability out there on the market.
Well, I'm going to be very interested to see what the Reds and Pirates decide to do in all of this, because number one, the Reds, that was a team that should have been rebuilding in the offseason, and instead they were bigger buyers than anyone thought. And it just seems like that ownership group, they just want to go in there and build around Joey Votto and Scooter Gennett and see what happens. Well, you know, they made those trades with the Dodgers. You know, you saw all these veterans now be added to the lineup. They've got established starting pitchers, and I just wonder, would the Reds consider blowing that up and moving a lot of those vets? Because theoretically they could, but the way that front office manages, it doesn't sound like that. Now the Pirates,
no, that's not the rhetoric. That's not the rhetoric with Cincinnati. Part of me with that organization, it feels like they think they owe it to their fans, because it's been a while since Brandon Phillips and Joey Votto got Edinson Volquez on the hill. I mean, that it's been some years now, even though it kind of feels like yesterday. So I think they look at it and say, we're right there, only a few games off the pace with everyone else. We're going to make some moves. I can't see them selling off assets. And the Pirates, who I know you're going to get into here as well, but I mean, they were buyers last year, and I thought it was bizarre.
Yeah, well, thanks to the Brewers for that.
That really worked out.
That was all because of the Brewers. If the Pirates didn't sweep the Milwaukee Brewers in a 5-game series, I guarantee you they're not going to get Chris Archer. But they had that extra hope. It gave them that little shot of confidence, and they decided to do it. And now in hindsight, Chris Archer has sucked, and the two prospects they gave up to the Rays have both been really good. Austin Meadows is having a hell of a year, and that's the name of the pitcher. He's hurt now. But he was pitching really well for the first couple of months there. And if you're a Pirates fan, I'm sure you're definitely kicking yourself that those are two guys you could have built around.
I thought it was stupid at the time. And oh, by the way, the Brewers, who I know a lot of people wanted to go out there and get Archer, that would not have been the right move looking back on it. And they got to the NLCS. So I think it worked out as well as it could have.
Now, if I'm the Pirates, I think I'm moving Felipe Vasquez, because with Vasquez and the amount of control he has, and he's one of the top closers in baseball right now, think about the return you can get for this guy. If I'm making a trade with the Dodgers, I mean, if there's any team I'm making a trade for, it would be the Dodgers, because the Dodgers have some great prospects in their system right now, including a kid who's going to be joining us on the show tomorrow, Gavin Lux, who's from Kenosha, Wisconsin, who has accelerated through their farm system. He's at AAA right now, hitting about 500. I mean, I kid you not. This kid could be a stud for them.
Yeah, and remember him at Fox City Stadium a couple of years ago for the state tournament.
Right. So imagine if you're the Pirates, you just traded away two of your top prospects to get Chris Archer that didn't work out. Imagine replenishing your farm system with some of those younger guys in the Dodgers system, including someone like Gavin Lux. You might be able to use Gavin Lux by the end of the year, and if you're still playing decent baseball, you still might actually have a chance to compete for a wild card spot if you play your cards right, which is crazy to think if it still stays like this with the parity.
Yeah, and the Dodgers are in position to sell off minor league assets as well, because they are legitimate contenders to win the World Series. And for a market that size, it's been a long time since they have won it all. So I don't think you're off base on that at all, Joe. I mean, if Pittsburgh is smart about it, that's the move that I would make. It doesn't mean that you're conceding necessarily, because we've seen teams do that before too, where you can be a buyer and a seller at the same time. You sell off an asset that's going to net you a large return, and then maybe you add a piece that's that doesn't have that wow factor, but can still make you a better team to a certain extent, and then just see where things shake out. And if nothing else, you've bettered yourself for the long haul.
Well, as we were just talking about Gavin Lux, I just saw this on my Twitter feed. He's in AAA right now. He's playing for Oklahoma City. He's 3-for-3 with 2 doubles in the game thus far. And I'm telling you, this kid is hitting around .500 right now. He has been that hot between AA and AAA.
Yeah, that's an intriguing piece. If LA would be willing to part with him at this juncture to get an elite level closer or an elite level bullpen piece. I know they have Kenley Jansen there, but to add a guy of Vasquez's caliber would seem like a logical play for them. And, you know, in the position that they're in, it's different than the Brewers right now, where you're saying, well, I just don't know that they're there.
Well, and the other thing too, is with the Dodgers, I mean, how many competitive teams have they had over the years, and how many times have they fallen short? How many times have they had great regular seasons and then they just choke in the postseason?
They have, but traditionally you go into these World Series the last 2 years against Houston and Boston, and was anybody surprised to see them get beat by those teams?
No,
last year I wasn't. I mean, the American League was superior. I don't know that that's the case this year. There are good teams over there. I think the Dodgers are on the same level.
Well, I mean, but imagine adding Felipe Vasquez to the back end of that bullpen with Kenley Jansen. Those are your eighth and ninth inning guys that you have to face.
Yep. Absolutely.
I think at this point, if you're a Dodgers fan, you are probably as all in as you want to be. And I think there's probably some frustration from Dodger fans because they keep falling short here. I would not be surprised if they're saying, you know what, we don't care what prospects we're giving up. Felipe Vasquez, get him here.
Yeah, I could see that as well, because it is a situation where you don't go to the World Series 3 straight years all that often, even when you're a really good team. So it would behoove them at this point to go all in and at least make sure you get one with this core that they have in place. I didn't realize this looking at the clock. We've got one segment to go. We're going to we'll come back, wrap up shop, look ahead to this Brewers game tonight at Arizona a little bit closer. The Bill Michaels Show wrapping up in a couple of minutes. Marcus Pfaff in for Bill. Again, the Bill Michaels Show.
16 stations strong. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Shop on the Bill Michaels Show. Marcus Pfaff, Radio Joe Zenzola. Bill out tomorrow as well. Tim Allen will be filling the big chair at that point. Looking ahead to tonight with the Milwaukee Brewers. Of course, late start with them being out west. 8:40 first pitch. You got Zach Davies on the hill against Merrill Kelly. Household name there, I'm sure, in the state of Wisconsin. Just looking ahead to this four-game set. You've got Davies, Chacin, Gio Gonzalez, and Brandon Woodruff lined up to start for you. Frankly, if I'm a Brewer fan, I like my odds. I feel pretty good about that. And as we've said, the next 2 weeks, you better play solid baseball to put yourself in position to be buyers of some sort. How big they will be buying remains to be seen, but to at least feel like you're in contention. Gio Gonzalez, by the way, coming back Saturday, he gets Zach Greinke. That's probably the one day where I'm not so sure I love the odds because of how good Greinke has been, but see what Gio could do coming off the DL and the IL in his most recent stretch down at AAA. Pitched pretty well there, so we'll see.
So I've got a couple of cool statistics here, courtesy of the Brewers media relations, because they put out their game notes. First thing about the starters, Brewers starters have a 2.60 ERA over their last 17 games. This goes back to June 27th. Washington is the top team with a 2.20 team ERA. Tampa is second with 2.49, and then the Brewers are third with a 2.60.
Well, that speaks to what Craig Counsell was saying after game one, the loss to the Braves, that, hey, I feel like we need to get more out of our offense. The pitching's been pretty good. And based on that, yeah, it has been decent. So you need to score. And they've done that the last two games.
All right, and now here's a little note on Keston Hira.
Keston Hira has hit safely in 13 of his last 15 games, batting .393 with 4 home runs and 10 RBIs. Hira is on a 7-game hitting streak during that stretch where he's batting .556 with 3 home runs and 9 ribbies. My goodness.
Yeah, wow. That guy is as advertised. I don't know if you keep up this torrid pace the rest of the year. That seems like a lot to ask, but an injection of life into the Brewer offense, certainly, and that will be huge moving forward. You brought it up a while back. Could you put him into that leadoff spot? I love the idea of it, to have Hira and Yelich leading off the game there for you. I can't imagine any pitcher wants to throw to those two guys. We'll see if they ultimately go that direction, or if Craig Counsell has something else in mind with where to position the hot-hitting Hira. But, wow, no longer is it just Yelich and Grandal and Moose that you have to rely on with Hira in the mix. So we'll see. By the way, before we get out of here, J.B. Holmes currently atop the leaderboard, Joe, 5-under at the British Open. And there's Shane Lowry sitting a stroke back, and John Rahm. They're both at -4. I'd have to scroll a long time to see Tiger. I'm not going to do it.
Don't even bother. He's going to miss the cut. It's okay.
Well, if you're a golf fan, enjoy the rest of the British Open over the next few days. I will certainly be doing that. I enjoyed our time together on Tuesday and today. Appreciate you letting me keep the chair warm. Joe, until next time, appreciate it, man. Thanks a bunch.
It's been a lot of fun. Really enjoyed it. Tomorrow, by the way, not only will Tim Allen be here, we're going to talk with Buster Olney of ESPN. We'll get his thoughts on the trade market.
Very nice. I look forward to that. I'll be tuned in. Hope you all will be as well. Again, my name's Marcus Papp. Thanks so much. This has been The Bill Michaels Show.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.